Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts as your host for Jack Watts on Recovery, speaking to you live today from Midtown Atlanta, from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower, overlooking Majestic Buckhead, where the day is beautiful. There's not a cloud in the sky. It is crisp and cool, but there is definitely a hint of spring in the air, and we love it. All right, as I do so often, I am going to begin this show with a prayer. And this is a prayer that I wrote when I was absolutely at the bottom of myself, when I didn't see any way out, when despair overwhelmed me. Father, my heart, once blissfully happy, now ache, and I feel unworthy to come before you. By the contemptuous smirk of others, my worthlessness seems well known. I'm so ashamed of myself. And there's nobody to say, it's going to be okay. Remember, God is there for you no matter what. I feel like I need to cringe and slink, never again holding my head high. I feel like I need to skulk in the shadows rather than boldly embrace the light. I feel like you don't love me, Lord. I wonder how you could when I don't even love myself, and I fear that I never will. Yet, in the depth of my shame, when sorrows seem overwhelming, you are there, always vigilant, always available, always telling me, my child, I know what you have done. I know how badly you feel. I know you think your life has no value, but that's not how I see you. Not at all. In spite of everything, I love you just the way you are. That is why I sent my son to take care of your shame and wash it all away, making your life whiter than snow. Now leave the past behind. Hold your head up high and walk with me into the future. I still have a plan for you, a plan filled with hope and with promise. That was a prayer that I wrote a long time ago, and it's exactly how I felt at the time. And that's exactly what my response from the Lord was about it. I think that there are a lot of people, millions in America, that feel exactly the same way. And today we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that Christian people face that they don't know how to deal with. And Stacy's on the line. I'm bringing her on. Stacy, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully well. Is it lovely down there in Florida?
No, actually, it has rained most of the day, and it's real muggy.
Wonderful. I'm glad to know that it isn't spectacular down there. Although I will have to say, it is just a really magnificent day up here. And if it really stayed this cool, it wouldn't bother me. Not growing up in Boston the way I have. All right, you know, I have spent a couple of days talking to several people. When you are me and you do the things that I do, when people have troubles, they call, they text, they email, and I wanted to talk a little bit about some things. As believers, we are taught that God can change anybody and that God can break through a hardened heart, and he can absolutely do wonders with people, and to always and to never give up hope. And sometimes I don't think that that works very well. I know it doesn't work very well, and I know that there are people that are out there who are incapable of change. People that have personality disorders that are so, that it's, their worldview is so bad, so flawed, that they can't see truth from truth's perspective, because their wounding, which is lifelong, it never changes, nor is it capable of changing. And when a good Christian person, and you know, these are some of these things we should be taught as early as high school, so that when you run into somebody like this, you can see them for who they are and move on. But what happens is people marry people like this, and they're naive and they're vulnerable, and they get the living daylights kicked out of them, and they don't know what happened. And there they are, and they're in a situation that is not ever going to resolve the way they hope and pray. Now, I'm not going to be in a position where I'm going to tell people, you know, what to do. But I do want to be in a position here where we tell people what to look for, what to understand, so that they can have a fighting chance. Now, there are two particular disorders that I want to talk about. These are the ones that I think are the most prevalent. Borderline personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder. By and large, borderlines are more often than not women, and narcissists are more often than not men. But it doesn't mean that there can't be one as versus the other, and they're pretty similar in a lot of ways. But in talking about this, if you are in a situation, and I mean to tell you, Stacy, I can't tell you how many people have talked to me about these things, and you know, I'm not a doctor, nor am I going to make a diagnosis, but I can tell people the kind of things that they need to watch out for. Somebody that's borderline, I mean, the number one thing is that they're terrified of abandonment. You know, it's kind of like, I hate you. Where are you going? You're not going to leave me, are you? And that terror of abandonment, a lot of people, well, most people, don't want to be abandoned or left. But this is, you know, kind of like fear of abandonment on steroids. And, you know, they also have really intense and unstable relationships. It's, you're either the most wonderful person in the entire world, or you are a worthless piece of crap. And you never know which one you're going to be. You know, what it is the person off. Has that Has that ever, it's like walking on eggshells. In fact, I think there was a pretty good book that was written about that one time, walking on eggshells. Are you there?
Oh, I'm here. I'm listening. There's another one called I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can.
Oh, my goodness. That, you know, I was...
And that describes it.
I remember being in a relationship with a woman, married, and doing anything I could do to make sure that everything was okay so that she wouldn't be upset. It was always trying to guess what kind of mood she was going to be in and adjusting my behavior to fit into her radical mood swing. And I didn't realize it at the time, but by doing that, I was making myself very unhealthy. And I was just trying. It's just like, okay, this is, I'm married to this woman. And it's my job to try and make everything work. But with a borderline or a narcissist, no matter what you do, you can't make it work. Yeah. And see, that is the key. It reminds me of Romans 1. For this cause, God gave them over to boom, 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 boom. And for this cause, God gave them over. These are people that are not really capable of sustaining a relationship. And it's important that people know this. They have identity disturbances. Their self-image is so fractured that their low self-esteem is off the charts. I mean, most people have trouble with low self-esteem. Even the people that really appear like they are on top of the world and are, you know, beautiful and talented and, you know, no flaws in their face, no physical flaws. And, you know, it's like they've got everything going. Well, as often as not, people like that are, you know, suffer from low self-esteem.
Yes.
Most people do. You know, when it comes right down to it about that, then they're impulsive. They will engage in reckless sexual activity. It's one of the big ones. Things that other
drinking.
People... Yeah, uh-huh.
Jack, I have a very close friend who is diagnosed with borderline personality and had various unhealthy things go on in her life. And a little bit later on in life, she began to really develop a close relationship with the Lord. And she started spending 2 and 3 hours a day with Him, reading the Bible. She then got into reading The Search for Significance, our book, and Conquering Codependency, another one of our programs. And through doing this, she literally reprogrammed her brain. And science is now catching up to where you can do this. When you have this behavior groove literally form in your brain to where when the situation occurs, you go down into your dysfunctional behavior quickly because of those grooves. And it takes time of reprogramming that and filling in those grooves and having different positive grooves. And I've known her for a very long time. Wonderful, wonderful woman who has a beautiful ministry. So there is help for these people, but they really have to work hard because there's no pill they can take, like somebody who has a chemical imbalance with depression. There's no pill they can take. It's just work, and many people give up on them. But there is help, and now science is even catching up with it.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. My experience in life is that I have not seen anybody that's been like this that has really turned the corner. Now, I will say that particularly with a man, when the kind of testosterone level abates and they're, you know, older, some of these narcissistic things can diminish because they cease being so competitive. But, boy, that's a long time to wait for somebody to turn around. And what ends up happening is that, you know, people just put into these relationships, give of themselves, and are very selfless in it for long periods of time, praying, going to counseling, going to church, talking to ministers, talking to friends, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And finally, there's just something that happens, and it's like, I don't want anything to do with you, and I never will again. And when that happens, they're done.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is why we have so many people that are narcissists and bipolar, excuse me, not bipolar, borderline, is beyond me. It's, from what I understand, it isn't like they're not just like somebody who's bipolar or a sociopath or anything like that, but there's not. That's why they call them borderline. They're on the borderline of being where they could be that, but you know they still are in the kind of far end of the range of people before they get into really substantial paranoia. And bipolar and some of the other things where they are not functional. Most narcissists are not only functional, but they are highly skilled, very bright, and achieve great things often. Now, it's done at the expense of others. And in our little kind of framework and in our business that we do, we see some of these people. Some of these great television evangelists are narcissists, period.
Oh, my gosh, period.
Their vision of what God wants for them is what God wants for everybody, and you have to fall in line with what they say, or there's something wrong with your relationship with God. So they use, abuse, and discard people routinely, destroying people's lives in the process, and they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
They don't get it. It's because they are more important than the others. And they don't have to follow the same rules. You have to be honest in everything that you do. But it's okay for them to have extras financially. You got to be faithful to your, you know, to your husband or your wife. But it's you know, it's okay for them to be screwing around.
Yeah.
And they do it. And it's like, it's okay. And when people find it out, they're devastated because these people routinely preach good sermons, not a theory. For example, Jimmy Swaggart. Let's just take him. I'm going to say the name. He preached some of the best messages on morality of anybody around. Here's what my theory is. He did this trying to preach to himself to keep himself from acting out on his sexual addiction, which was to, you know, bring hookers into the room and not have intercourse with them, but, you know, masturbate, which is pretty bizarre in and of itself. But that was okay for him. And nobody needed to know that. I mean, there was no accountability. I mean, just the kinds of things. And, I mean, since his is newsworthy, you know, it's one thing. And it happened quite a while ago.
Right.
But these things happen a lot. Not just a little bit, but a lot.
A lot.
And I have seen things in my years of working for Christian ministries that I would not and couldn't imagine even that people would, I mean, they would be aghast. But it's because they're privileged. Now, you know what? We see that, I see this with Barack Obama. You know, the sequestration happened, and, well, you know, in his pettiness, he cut off funds so that these great schools couldn't take tours of the White House on their spring break, kept by Yellowstone from being open, you know, for something like 30 million people that go in the winter, you know, because, well, we can't afford that. But, you know, it was okay for him to spend all that money going golfing with Tiger Woods. And they're planning on their vacation in Martha's Vineyard because they are privileged and they deserve this. It isn't just because you know, he's obtuse. All presidents are obtuse about stuff like that. It's this feeling, this belief, this conviction that I am better than you. I deserve this. You don't. I'm important. You aren't.
Exactly.
You get in relationships with people like that, and what do they do? What does a Christian do? Just keep praying and praying and praying and get abused and abused and abused? Tough stuff. But I can't tell people what they're supposed to do about the things, nor am I going to put myself in a position to do so. But by just talking about what these things are, people will be able to say, oh, my goodness. You just talking about Charlie. You just nailed him to the wall. That's exactly what Charlie's like. Or, oh my goodness, Sally. That's exactly what she's like. She does these things to me, and I they talk about guys, you know, doing this stuff. That the minute I walk in, I have no idea who's going to be greeting me at the door. If she's going to be nice or not, or she can start out being nice, and then 5 minutes later, boom, and it will be for something that just absolutely makes no sense whatsoever, and I never get it. I never am able to just be fully relaxed and at home and sit down and enjoy my life. You know what? There are people like that. There aren't just a few people like that. There are a bunch like that, and I remember going through it myself. Never knowing and saying it, and just like, what's going to happen? How is this going to resolve? How can this work out? What can I do? That was my question all the time. What can I do? And the answer is nothing.
And Jeff, what did Solomon say at the end of his life? The wisest man in the world. He did everything. He said it was all for nothing. Nothing.
Well, you know, that's a little, you know, vanity upon vanity. I mean, I do understand that. I also understand that as believers, we have purpose. And that God has put us in a place and at such a time as this that we need to use our talents, our strength, and our hopes and our aspirations to further his kingdom and his work. Now, when you're in a situation where that can't happen, you've got, boy, that's tough. I've been there. At the same time, I'm not there anymore. I thought I'd be there forever, and I wasn't. And I'm grateful to not be. At the same time, you know, I didn't orchestrate what happened to extricate myself from the situation. The Lord did that himself, for which I'm grateful. But it's, people have a hard time. They don't, you know, they don't know. We're not taught these things in school.
No. And definitely not
at
home.
How old were you before you'd ever even heard the term borderline personality disorder?
In my 20s.
Pardon me?
In my 20s.
Well, you're lucky. I was in my 30s. And I remember saying, well, you need borderline. I said, what's that? You know, does that mean somebody's, you know, half American, half Mexican? That was what the border was. I had no idea. And yet, you know, these are the things, if people understand it, then they can cope better, number one. And number two, if they're not in a relationship with somebody, I mean, if they're not married to them and they're in a relationship and they keep saying, well, this will work out and I can fix this, I can fix this, I can fix this, I can fix this. People say that all the time and they think that they can and they can't, and they spend their whole lives trying to fix somebody who is not fixable.
Yeah.
If you are in that situation, don't walk away. Run.
You got
now,
it.
If you're married, it's a different story. But if you're not married to somebody and you're in one of these things, or thinking about it, or, well, I really kind of like, you know, Bill. He's really a good man. Now, he does have a drinking problem, and when he drinks, he's mean. But other than that, he's the most wonderful man in the world. Well, it's just nonsense. Run. Don't walk. Run. Your life has more value than that, and it isn't something that you want to waste with somebody capriciously. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It does to me too. Now, we've got 1 minute left. If people want some of our things, they can, you know, they can go to mcgeepublishing.com, and we've got books to help with all of the kind of problems that we've talked about, and there are a bunch of books that we have, and they work, and they've been around for a while. They've stood the test of time. Now, let me just encourage the people who are listening. God loves you. He has a wonderful plan for your life, and you can be fulfilled. And if you're in a tough spot now, it's not there forever. And let me just say good night and God bless everybody, and God bless the United States of America. Bye-bye.